All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all for being here today. How many of you watched the keynote this morning? Awesome. So we got a chance.
I watched it twice.
So we got a chance to show you guys some really cool technology in today's keynote. And today we're going to take you on a little bit of a behind-the-scenes tour of some of that technology and show you how you can create amazing cross-device experiences in your own applications. I remember my first computer. It was a Windows 98 desktop. And everybody, I see you, Thomas, rolling your eyes. Everybody in my family of four people used the same machine. My brother and I would fight as we got off the school bus over who would get to play games on the computer first when we got home. Not long after that, we each got our own devices. I got a Windows 7 laptop. He had some fancy gaming desktop. And then shortly after that, I became one of the 60% of users with a PC, phone, and tablet. Today, my routine spans across many different devices. To wake up in the morning, I have an alarm set on my Cortana Invoke speaker. And as I get ready, I have Cortana play music and turn on my smart lights. When I head out to work, I switch over to listening to music on my Android phone. If I've had my coffee that morning and I'm feeling pretty productive, when I get on the bus, I usually start trying to do some work, answering some emails, editing some documents. When I get to work, I want to keep up the same productive workflow, this time on my desktop. And then I have a bunch of meetings throughout the day, so I often switch back and forth between my laptop and my desktop. At the end of my workday, I'm back on the bus, back on my Android phone, this time relaxing, watching a movie. And when I get back to my apartment, I want to keep watching that same movie or video, this time taking advantage of the bigger screen real estate, watching on my TV through my Xbox. This routine is not unique. It's increasingly becoming the norm, the way in which many of us live our lives. I can clearly count myself among the 42% who start an activity on one device and finish it on another. And like 82% of consumers, most of my devices span across different platforms. Switching between these devices and these platforms has been difficult in the past. Today, we're going to show you that it doesn't have to be that way anymore. There's evidence of this shift from single device, cross-platform throughout the industry. Kindle's a really good example here. You can have a Kindle device, a Kindle desktop app, and a Kindle mobile app. And no matter which one you're reading on, the place in your book will be synced across all of them. On top of that, if you have the audiobook companion to that book through Audible, that will also remember where you stopped reading and be in sync. Spotify, too, provides a great cross-device experience. From my Android phone, I can control what's playing on my PC and even switch what device is playing music pretty much seamlessly. Microsoft, too, is creating new experiences in response to this shift. You can have Edge on your Android or iOS devices that lets you launch to Edge on your PC. You can pick up where you left off with Cortana and even Microsoft Launcher. Now, earlier today, we got to show you some great stuff with Timeline and Sets, and how that, too, lets you resume workflows that you were previously working on the same device or even across devices. We also announced the Your Phone app, which lets you link your phone to your PC to access and send text messages and even retrieve your photos. So here we'll show you just a quick little recap of what we showed in the timeline, in the keynote this morning for a timeline. So this is showing you how you can go and re-engage in whatever activities you're previously engaged in and another workflow, both on the same device or across devices. And now this even works totally across platforms. So I can go and browse on Edge on my Android phone, work on a Word document on my Android phone. And this will create an activity and send it up to Microsoft Graph so you can pick it up from your timeline on another device. So here you can open it and go right back into that workflow. We also announced today that Timeline is available on Android and iOS, both through Microsoft Launcher and Edge on iOS. So now you have access to your timeline, to your activities across all these platforms. we also showed you sets. And sets is a really powerful productivity tool to help you understand the context of the work you were doing. So a lot of the time you're editing a Word document in this case, and maybe you're referencing a web page or referencing another document. You can now group those tasks together, and it will remember that these were all in the same context and let you pick those back up again. This works really well with Timeline, because now Timeline also understands that you had these sets in that activity. So it's all grouped together in one activity, and you can go and you see what we were working on a previous device, that it had two tabs, and similarly over on the other one, you have four tabs, so you can reactivate that, get you right back into that context, right back into that workflow, and be that much more productive. The Your Phone app, as demoed earlier, lets us retrieve the latest photos on our device. So this is really convenient because now you don't have to break up that productivity stream. You can just access it directly from your PC. Similarly, with sending and receiving SMS, you can now do this seamlessly from your PC, as well as being able to transfer files and drag and drop photos and files directly to the people you were texting. The best part about these experiences that we just showed you is that they're built using the same SDK and the same APIs that we're going to show you guys today. Our main goal is to enable cross-device user productivity. We've done that by building a platform that lets you interact with devices both nearby and in the cloud. We run on Windows, Android, iOS, and using Microsoft Graph. We're the services and client APIs that power experiences like Sets, Timeline, the Your Phone app. But most importantly, we're the platform to enable developers like you to create amazing cross-device experiences in your own applications. So now I'm going to tell you guys a little bit of a story. And throughout my story, I'm going to identify some challenges that I've faced with cross-device experiences as I've been developing this My Foodie app that I've created. And then Sean is going to come in and save the day. So I'm a really big foodie. I love trying out new restaurants in Seattle and trying out new dishes. And I'm always looking for that hot new spot. I even have a food Instagram account so I can document and take pictures of all the different awesome foods I've tried. Now, a few weeks ago, I had a friend visiting that I went to high school with back in Montreal. And one of the things I was most excited about was to share with her some of the food scene in Seattle and try out new restaurants and see what she thought. So my friend had just got to town, and we were sitting on my couch, me with my Android phone, her with her Surface device, casually discussing where we wanted to eat for dinner. Now, I keep a curated list of all the different restaurants I want to try and cuisines I want to try in the My Foodie app. I really want to share this list with my friend to sort of expedite this process of choosing a restaurant, because, you know, I've already chosen all the good ones, so she really just needs to pick from my list. So, Sean, is there a way that I can get this information from my Android device to her Windows device?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, first of all, how many of you have installed or tried out the April 2018 update of Windows 10? Yeah, a lot of you have it on. Have any of you tried the nearby share functionality that's enabled? Yeah, it's pretty neat. So what that allows you to do is, if you can go over to 8 here, you know, I can see on my PC here, if I, you know, select a file, this beautiful drawing I did like 30 seconds ago, I can select share here, and I'll see, you know, both contacts, which I don't have on this machine, to connect to other applications, but also nearby devices that I can share this file to. And that's great for Windows and for Windows applications, because that's all built into the platform, and you get that as part of kind of the share contracts that you're already using today for Windows applications. But what if you have a mobile application, for instance, on Android? So we can take a quick look here at Megan's unhealthy obsession with taking pictures of her food that she's gone so far as building an application for. And, you know, we can scroll through, see some of the things that she's taken pictures of. And what I've done is on the detail page here where she has, you know, her review, I've added a little share button. And what that share button does is it does exactly what we saw on the PC. It tries to find nearby devices. And here we can take a look at the device that it's connected to right here. And when I click that share link, what it does is it shared the review for that restaurant to my PC. And it disappeared there. So I'll just pick it up from the Action Center. And we can open it. And what's going to happen is it's going to launch that website. Now, that links aren't the only thing we can share. We can also share photos. So I'll go grab a photo here. Here's a photo that I swear I took of Seattle just last night. It was beautiful. And we can see that this shows up as well. And so I can grab this file from my phone if I have a picture, and I can share it directly from my Android phone to my PC, and we can see it opens up just like that.
I'm not convinced you're that good of a photographer,
Sean. I am definitely that good of a photographer. I don't know how you get this angle. This must be from Superman or something like that. So let's take a look at how we implement that in this application. So if you want to take advantage of these type of features with the connected devices, SDK, and platform, there's four things you kind of have to do. One is, you know, take a dependency on our app on our SDK, then initialize the platform, go and discover devices that are nearby, and then connect and send files or URIs between them. So let's take a look at how I did that here. So first of all, I went to our website over here. So this is the Project Rome website. So you notice that Megan didn't mention Project Rome. We used to be called Project Rome. We kind of still are called Project Rome. You may have heard of us as Project Rome. A lot of our SDKs still say Project Rome. But you know, as we're kind of getting a lot of features, like you saw this morning, are getting built on these and are really production ready and rock solid, we're trying to drop the project name because we're legitimate now. Which kind of leads me to kind of the one thing that I wanted to ask before we kind of drop the Rome name is, when I add Project Rome to an application, is it called Romanizing an application or romancing an application? What do you guys think?
I mean, Rome, romance language, I think we can go with it.
All right, let's dim the lights, get some wine, and open up Android Studio. All right, so from the Project Rome website, I can go over to GitHub here, where we keep all our SDKs and samples. And I can see where there's a link to our SDK right here. So for Android, you saw we had SDKs. Actually, I'll go back there for a second. You can see we have SDKs available, obviously, for Windows, for Android, for iOS. Xamarin's actually coming soon with our latest SDK. This version is a little bit out of date now, as well as MS Graph, which we'll be talking about today a little bit too. So I can go over here, and I can get the information I need to go and grab our connected devices SDK. And I'll go add that over here to my Android Studio project. Where did that go? Right down here. And you can see I've added it. I added it before because nobody wants to watch Gradle Sync if you've ever built an Android application. That sometimes takes a while. But once I've done that, my application is now ready to use the connected devices SDK. But the other thing I need to do is make sure that I have the right permissions in my manifest. So that NearShare feature uses Bluetooth to discover nearby devices. So we need to make sure that we have, as well as the permissions we probably already have, like internet and the network state, access to the network state. We need Bluetooth, which allows us to connect over Bluetooth. Bluetooth admin, which lets us discover nearby Bluetooth devices. And finally, I've added the course location permission. And this is because we'll use Bluetooth beacons to discover devices, and those inherently have a little bit of location information in them. So it's important for us to, you know, ask the user permission for that, do the right thing there. So after we've done that, our application is all ready to write some code. So the thing I showed you over there was a share fragment I created for sharing. And the first thing that does is, you know, requests that location permission. And then we initialize the platform. There's a bunch of parameters here I'll, spoiler alert, talk about a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But if we're just detecting nearby devices and devices that aren't ours, I don't need to pass really any parameters into the platform to do discovery. So how many of you love Java? Yeah? Okay. Big takers. There's one. Okay. We'll get through this together, guys. So what's happening here is I'm creating this platform instance, and then I call, this is how they do async in Java. Actually, it's a little bit cleaner in some of the newer Java. And hopefully, if that works, I get a nice platform. And once I have that platform initialized, I can go and discover devices. And that's done with an object we call the remote system watcher. which will go and look for devices kind of appearing nearby or within your network. And the remote system watcher optionally takes some filters. So I've added three filters here. One is the proximal filter, which means I'm only going to find nearby devices as opposed to devices in the cloud. Obviously, I only want devices that are available to share to, as opposed to all devices. And finally, I've set it to anonymous, which means not necessarily my devices, but everyone's devices who's around. So once I've created those filters, I can create my remote system watcher, and I can hook up some event handlers for when the watcher discovers those devices. So I've expanded one of them here, which all we're doing in the added listener is we're adding it to our list that you saw there. And then you know what I did is I selected a device and I hit the share button for link. And what that does is it calls this share UI method down here. And it's really simple to share UIs. All you have to do is create a connection request, which tells the platform which device you're connecting to. You use our share sender object. We check that the device actually supports sharing to. If it's a Windows device that doesn't have the April 2018 update, you may not be able to share to it. And then once that's done, we just share our URI. Sending files is simple as well. We create that request. We create the near share sender. In this case, I've added a progress callback because for longer files, good idea to show the user, you know, that it's transferring. In this case, I've just sent it out to the log because that's where I expect most of our users will be looking for progress. That was a joke, guys. Come on. And then I use our send file helper to send the file. And this send file helper actually also takes a URI. That's how Android passes around files. So we just point it to the file, and it can send that over the network to it. If you have a more advanced scenario, you can also send bytes directly. There's a handler that you can overload to do that. But that was really it. That's really all it took to add sharing to your Android application and get integrated into the exact same experiences that Windows devices now have.
Awesome. Thanks, Sean. I'm so excited that I can create sort of a companion experience to this awesome functionality that we just released in the Windows April 2018 update. And really, four simple steps, just by integrating the SDK, initializing the platform, discovering devices using the Remote System Watcher class, and then connecting to those devices to pass URI, file, or bytes, whatever's most relevant in your scenarios, in your applications, using the NearShare Sender class. Now, we demoed this functionality going from Android to Windows. And as we mentioned, this has been released in the Windows April 2018 update between Windows devices. So that functionality already exists in Windows for you guys to near share away amongst your Windows devices. And we're really hoping to bring the full suite of functionality to Android and iOS in the near future. Now, Sean, we talked about discovery over Bluetooth, but what about the transfer? Is that also Bluetooth?
Yeah, you notice that was pretty fast to send a picture over. If you ever try to transfer a picture over Bluetooth, sometimes it can be a little slow. And one of the great things about our platform is, you know, we pick the right transport for you. So in this case, we did discovery over Bluetooth because that's, you know, a great way to discover which devices are nearby. And then we actually did the transfer over the Wi-Fi network because these two devices can see each other because they're actually on the same network hub. So like that's really cool because we use kind of the right transfer for the job, the right transport for the job. And you know, the developer doesn't really have to do anything. They just say that they want to find nearby devices, mm-hmm. and we pick the fastest connection we can find.
So we can really see where this might be valuable in the workplace. So think of all the times that maybe you're sitting next to somebody and you just want to get that information over. Maybe you're late to a meeting and you're quickly editing something on your Android phone, and your coworker is already plugged into the projector, presenting, dialed into the Skype call. And you don't want to have to wait for them to receive an email with the latest changes or have to deal with all the dongles to get projecting on your machine for Skype. It's just an unnecessary hassle. So now you can nearby share from your Windows and Android devices and really just expedite that process. So now my friend has looked at this list of restaurants that I gave her, and she's told me that she really wants to try the Queen Anne Beer Hall. I look at the MyFoodie app on my Android phone just to reread some of my notes and see if it's someplace I want to go to. It sounds pretty good, but we probably want to look at the menu before we make any hasty decisions and really just make sure it's someplace we want to eat that night. It's annoying how today, to do that, we both have to open the app and scroll through on our individual devices or crowd around one person's device. We're sitting on my living room couch right in front of my TV and Xbox. It'd be really great if we could take advantage of that screen real estate and just make a quick decision by both looking at the menu at the same time. Can you help me with that, Sean?
Yeah, I think I probably can. You know, one of the things, you know, when we showed the share, that was between you know, devices that were nearby but weren't for the same user. If you want to control your devices, we actually have a lot more options for commanding those devices. We can also go through the cloud in those cases. And I'll show you how to do that here. So let's go back over to my machine, and we can see my what I've done in the bottom right here is I've added this relay button, and this takes us to another device selector page. But what you've noticed here is that there's more devices. These are my devices. So I have a bunch of phones. Yes, I have a lot of phones. I have my laptop here that I'm using, and then I also have my laptop that I have back in the office. I also have my Xbox that's at home. So I can select these, and these have been discovered, you know, both proximally if they can see each other nearby, but also through the cloud. So they're not necessarily in the room with me. And then I can select one of those. So I've selected my nearby device here, and I can click, I can hit one of these buttons, and you can see it's launched the UWP version of Megan's application, which is really cool. I can also do things, you know, once it's launched, I can command it. So we can do like a little slideshow here, and we can see some of the food that she's, you know, taken pictures of in the past. These are all real photos that she's taken, by the way. We didn't go get stock photos.
Not entirely a made-up story.
So that's neat. So kind of behind the covers, let's take a look at what's going on. So if we go over, I created this relay fragment in Android. Very similar to what we saw before. I go and request permissions. I create a registration for my application in this time. So this time, instead of just anonymously finding things, I'm actually going to register my application with the Microsoft Graph. And so not only do I have to create this registration object, I also need to tell Microsoft about my application so the user can authenticate themselves with either Azure Active Directory or Microsoft account and actually register the device with Microsoft Graph. So in addition to creating this application builder, I also have to sign the user in. In this case, I'm using something called the sign-in helper, which is a sample that we provide. All it's doing is OAuthing with the Microsoft Cloud. There's lots of ways to do OAuth. Nice thing about this helper that we provide with our SDK as a sample is that it integrates nicely with our platform and manages things like those refresh tokens. But I do need to provide it this Microsoft account client ID, which I can go and easily get at the dev portal over here for Microsoft apps. So you can see I've already created one. You guys may have done this before. It's very common. I can add an app. There's really only one question you have to answer, which is the name. And you can go in and create the application. The important pieces I need are this GUID here, and then make sure I set it to be a native application, because in this case, I'm a mobile application that does the native OAuth flow. So once I've done that, I can pass that that GUID here to the account provider, and we can sign in. Again, this sign-in helper manages all that for me. This is all I need to call. The user typically only needs to sign in once. If they're already signed in, they may not even have to sign in again. And then they'll get that OAuth prompt that says, would you allow this application to see your list of devices? Now, I had already signed in here, so we didn't see that. Then once we've done that, we'll begin discovery, which I showed you. We get the registration object for actually registering our application with the cloud. I've set a couple like properties here. This is just kind of an example. You can also add properties registered in the cloud, which can help if you're trying to discover or find other, if your application is trying to find other applications on other devices, or even other instances of its own application. You can set, for instance, the version, but you can really set anything you want. I know that Megan loves cats, so I made her application also love cats.
I didn't even see that earlier.
That's new. So registration of the platform is the same as before, except with these extra parameters. Hopefully the platform gets created. And then we create the filters. This time our filter's a little bit different. We want to discover not only devices that are nearby, but also devices that we can discover through the cloud, through Microsoft Graph. And we also, in this case, only want to show my devices. And in fact, when we discover via the cloud, we will only return your devices. Obviously, we don't want to return every device on the internet. That'd be insane. So we create our listeners, same as before, and we start our watcher. When I hit that show button or the previous or next buttons on the application, if you remember back here, either of these two buttons, what was happening is I was actually launching a URI on my laptop here. So what Microsoft Graph allows you to do with connected devices, it allows you to pass commands and URIs between applications within a user's personal device graph. So just real quick, I'll show you what those buttons were hooked up to. All I was sending was this URI right here. So I had registered on Windows my, in that case, UWP application to handle the myFoodie colon command scheme. I'd registered that when the application was installed, and then I had a handler inside the application that basically parsed the rest of that URI and then navigated to the right page and did the right command. So when those buttons on Android were tapped, again, I create my remote system connection request, same as before, same as with sharing. This time I create a remote launcher, which what launches the URIs, and call my remote launch API. Very simple in that case. So that's a really powerful way, especially for passing around lightweight commands. URIs are a really good candidate for kind of fire and fret commands. They're easily parsed by a lot of libraries. So that was a really simple way to kind of create a cool remote control functionality into your application.
Yeah, awesome, Sean. I'm really excited to play with this new functionality in the MyFoodie app. And so again, in four simple steps, you can add this functionality into your own applications by integrating the SDK, initializing the platform, authenticating with OAuth. We support MSA and AAD at the platform level, and use the sign-in helpers library that we provide. Like Sean said, you're more than welcome to use your own OAuth library or build that yourself if you really feel like torturing yourselves a little bit.
Yeah, we weren't going to do that during this session. this is the family show. You don't want to hear me swearing at the OAuth providers.
This library is really great because, like Sean said, it understands the platform really well. Then discover users' devices using Remote System Watcher. And then pass URIs, messages, and app services using Remote Launcher and Remote App Service. And like Sean mentioned previously, this works both nearby, so proximally, or through the cloud, a little bit different from the nearby share scenario that we just showed you. And one of the nice things about writing this against the Microsoft Graph is you can also make these calls just using REST APIs, so writing directly to Graph endpoints.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like pretty much all the functionality that we have in connected devices is available through Microsoft Graph via your personal device graph within Microsoft Graph. Mm-hmm. So really, there's kind of parity for both connected devices, and then some of the stuff we'll show later also mm-hmm. through Graph.
And one of the fun things about this discover and launch functionality is this is actually the functionality that's behind the scenes on Edge on Android and iOS. So if any of you have played with the Send to My PC functionality on those mobile browsers, which I highly recommend trying out, I use it all the time. And that's actually built on top of this piece of the platform.
Do you think Edge set the property that it loves cats?
I mean, I think cat Edge videos, also, the internet, yeah. Kind of synonymous.
I think Edge also loves cats.
So my friend and I ended up going to dinner at the Queen Anne Beer Hall, and we had a really good meal. After dinner, I'd really like to update the notes that I took or that I thought of on the restaurant in the MyFoodie app. Now, I know I was browsing this page on the Android version of my phone earlier when we were trying to choose a restaurant. We've all seen this timeline experience that came out in the Windows April 2018 update. I'd really like to be able to jump right back into my workflow and my application, similar to how we see that working on timeline with some of the Microsoft first-party apps. So, Sean, is that something that I can do as a developer?
No, not really much you can do. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, you guys saw in the keynote this morning, Joe Belfiore spent a lot of time talking about timeline, talking about sets, and how like now is the right time for your application to start writing into the activities in Microsoft Graph so that your users can re-engage with your application across all of their devices. So we were just talking about a little bit earlier about using some APIs through Microsoft Graph and some through the client-side SDK. In the case of activities here, you can use the client-side SDK on iOS and Android. You can use the Windows SDK on Windows as well, which has really nice integration for activities, making it dead simple for your Windows, UWP, or even regular Win32 application to write activities. But in this case, I'm going to show you how to do it directly through Microsoft Graph, because we have a nice REST API for interacting with activities in Microsoft Graph. So if you've never used Microsoft Graph before, it's just a bunch of REST endpoints that we provide. Everything is at graph.microsoft.com. In this case here, we're at version 1. If you have been using the Activities APIs before, those have been in beta for the last few months. We're now in version 1, which is fantastic. Me is how you scope it down to just yourself. Under the Activities node, if you were to do a GET request from the Activities node, you would get all the activities associated with your current logged in user and your application. So you would get the set of activities your application had written for that user. But in this case, we're actually going to make a put request to that endpoint. So I've created an activity here. I'm calling it browse food. You can call it whatever you want. And I'm going to send it a JSON object. So let's take a look at what I've sent over here. So I probably should have written an object model on top of this to make it nice.
I've been teasing Sean about his JSON for weeks now.
But I thought it would be a little bit easier just to show the raw JSON payload. So I've created the same name here, browse food. In this case, this is the activity ID again. This can be whatever you want. It's just something that your application can use to identify this activity. And it should be kind of the unit of re-engagement for your user. So if they're doing an action of browsing food, maybe we would have editing food or something for this application as well as the two different things the users can do. If you have pages in your application, you might want to have an activity per page. The other important thing that we're going to do is we're going to specify an activity source host. So what this is this tells Microsoft Graph what the ID of your application is on different platforms that you support, on Android, on iOS, on Windows, and on the web. And this is hosted up at my website up here. And we can take a look at quickly what that looks like. It's really just a map of platforms and application IDs. You can see my package family name on Windows, and then my package name on Android and iOS, and then my website's MSA ID in this case. So I host that up on my website so that we know how to map those applications together.
Is that documented anywhere?
Yes, it is.
I have not been able to find it.
I will make for to come up here afterwards and get you a link, and then I'm also going to make sure that we get that on GitHub. Yes. And I'll show you another easier way to do it that we're announcing today as well. It's pretty cool in the next demo.
And just for the recording, he was asking if this was documented anywhere. So we'll follow up on that after.
So the third important piece is the activation URI. Again, I have registered for the scheme in my UWP application, also on Android and iOS. This is a nice light way to get your application launched. One other option is if I own, say, myfoodie.com, which I'm going to go register right after this session, so nobody register that. I could have put an app URI handler. I could have registered that in my UWP application, in which case, every time on Windows, Windows saw HTTP myfoodie.com, it would have actually launched my application. You can do a similar thing with universal links on iOS and application links on Android. So I've set those three elements. I'm also going to supply some nice visuals. So I've supplied some metadata around what display text is. I also have a nice adaptive card that I've created as well. And if you're not familiar with adaptive cards, we've got a session on that tomorrow. But that's a nice way to give you nice visuals on visuals for timeline. So as I browse around in my application here, I can select, for instance, this page. And what's going to happen in the background is I'm going to actually make that REST call. We'll just have this not open. I'll make that REST call up to Graph, and we'll add that activity to my timeline. So we'll see if I go into my timeline here, either by hitting this guy or going to WinTab, that I've created a nice card here in the background for my application that I can click. It launches, and it deep links into my application. Oh, and the picture changed. You guys saw waffles. I swear you saw waffles for a second, and then it flipped over to this.
That's a bug, not a feature, Sean.
What's the difference? OK, so that was a nice, light way to add activities to any application that you have cross-platform. You can use those REST APIs in Microsoft Graph, not just from Android, but obviously from iOS, from Windows, but also from your website.
Awesome. Thanks, Sean. Yeah, so like Sean said, we also provide a client SDK. My personal preference is to usually use the client SDK, but this is a nice lightweight way to get you guys using user activities pretty quickly. So all you have to do is authenticate with OAuth. Here again, we still only support MSA or AAD, but you also have the option of using the MSAL library, the MSAL library that Microsoft provides that lets you authenticate against MS Graph. If you're using other pieces of our client SDK, then again, that sign-in helpers token should be good to make calls against MS Graph as well.
Well, one of the nice things as well is, you know, writing those user activities not only gets you into timeline, but it also gets you into sets as well. So if you're writing a Windows application that uses the sets feature that we talked about this morning, using user activities are also kind of the unit of currency for sets as well.
So then you just make get or put requests to Microsoft Graph using the URL that Sean showed you earlier, and then add an adaptive card so that you can really leverage the surface of timeline and really get that nice visual and encourage that re-engagement back into your applications. Now, I know for me, this is probably the most useful thing that Sean has shown me so far. Since I started using Timeline a few months ago, it has increased my productivity so much. I love that I can just jump right back into a workflow and I don't have to remember what device I started this PowerPoint on. I can pick it up on my Surface Book, on my desktop. All I have to do is scroll through my timeline and find that application. So being able to take this functionality and put it into my own applications that I'm developing so that not only I can be more productive when I'm making ridiculous lists of food, but anybody, any of my users using my application can also get that added productivity. One thing we've also been noticing about Timeline, I've been really pleasantly surprised by a little bit, is just how sticky it is and how much users are loving it. We're seeing users coming back to Timeline every day and just really engaging in the surface. So like Joe B said this morning, like Sean reiterated, this is really the time for you guys to sort of jump on board and get your applications in Timeline as well. So of course, as part of my millennial Instagrammer restaurant going experience, I take a lot of pictures of my food. And I took some pictures of food when I went out to dinner with my friend. Sometimes I'll post these directly to Instagram, but the lighting in the restaurant was a little dim. I'm already back on my Surface. I kind of want to edit them in the Photos app before I post them online for the world to see. Now, we saw this functionality earlier today in the keynote, and that we showed you a little bit earlier of how the Your Phone app lets you retrieve photos directly from your phone. But is that something I can build into my own applications?
Yeah, that was a pretty cool feature. And in fact, it's kind of the reverse of what we showed with that remote control demo earlier, in that instead of, you know, commanding a Windows device, I'm actually commanding my mobile device from Windows. And of course, in that first scenario, I was able to rely on a lot of really cool infrastructure that Windows has provided to manage the push notification channel and manage application lifetime. And if I do the same sort of thing on mobile on Android, I can actually get the same kind of functionality. So what I did, if you want to move over to 8 there, is I've integrated your MyFoodie application with the notification provider on Android, in this case Firebase. Now I can do the same thing with GCM and the same thing with APNS on iOS as well. So I've integrated with that. There's a bunch of boilerplate code and a bunch of registration you have to do to make that work because you have this token that can change. So I've added all that. That's all documented well on Google's website in this case, and then also on Apple's website for APNS. Then once I've done that, again, I'm back here registering my application. And in this case, I have added the MyFoodie service, which is what we call an application service, this application is going to provide. And what this does is it gives me a contract so that I can talk between applications on both Android, iOS, and Windows, built on top of the native notification platform for those devices. So I'll take a quick look at what that looks like here, which is, it's a very simple interface. Basically, we provide a description, which is the name of the app service, and then we get these handlers when the connection's opened and when there's an event received. Now, the gentleman up here had asked, about registration. One of the things that we need to do if we want to get activated in the background on Android is we have to send it this FCM notification. So we need to register that with Microsoft Graph as well so that we can relay commands from a Windows device to an Android device or an iOS device. So One way to do registration for things like activities is with that JSON file that I showed you earlier. The other option that also works for activities, but also works for these type of relay scenarios, is to use the dashboard at developer.microsoft.com. So you can see here, I've created a couple applications for under the cross-device experiences section on the dashboard. In this case, the MyFoodie application. I put in that same information I did before for that JSON file. I have my Windows application here. I have the package family name. I have my Android application, and so on. I've also put in my application ID that I registered at apps.dev.microsoft.com. And finally, in this case, I've put in my FCM identity information. So I'll get an API key from the FCM portal, put that in here, as well as my sender ID. And what this does is it hooks up my application to be able to send messages between between Windows and my mobile devices. So after all that's happened, let's kind of take a look at what is actually going on. So if I open up my Windows application here, the UWP application, I can see I've enumerated my devices here on the left. I'm going to select this phone, and hopefully, yeah. So what it's done is actually, what's happened in this case is I've actually opened up the app service on this machine here. It sent a request up to Microsoft Graph. Microsoft Graph has been connected via Firebase FCM to my application here. I've gotten a message on my application, and I've sent back the response of all of the food that Megan here has taken a picture of. And in fact, I can click on one of these, and what the phone can do, it can actually open up an app service back the other way and send a photo of that food back to me. In this case, that actually went through a Proximal connection that it opened up back the other way. So that's pretty cool. I don't know. I think that's really cool. Yeah, one person thinks that's cool. There's a lot of cool stuff going on that's connecting together just to make it seamless and you know, only add a few lines of code to your application to get that kind of functionality. I mean, that's kind of very similar to your phone application that we saw earlier today, being able to kind of reach into your mobile device and get data and experiences from there and bring them back over to Windows.
Did you code?
What's that?
Okay. So you can integrate the same functionality that's in the Your Phone app into your applications in four steps. So, first you're also going to have to integrate the SDK and initialize the platform like we showed you in previous demos. But then from there, in your Android and iOS apps, declare your app service, then register your notification channel and the Microsoft Development Portal. Then switch back over to the Windows world, back into our comfort zone of C#. And then all this functionality for discovering devices using remote system and remote system app, that's already built into the Windows SDK. So if you have the Windows SDK, you're already a step ahead. You're ready to go and use some of this really cool functionality that we showed you. From there, connect and message between Windows, Android, and iOS using our app service APIs. So again, this all works through MSA and AAD, or using MSA and AAD accounts. A little bit different on Windows, as long as you're logged into the machine with an MSA or AAD account, that's the account that will be used for these scenarios. So a little bit different from the OAuth world of Android.
You don't have
and
to
iOS.
Log your application in separately on Windows. We'll do that for you. We'll also manage that push notification channel for you, so you don't have to do that kind of registration.
Yeah. And we had a really good idea, or Sean had a really good idea of how we could integrate this functionality into a Microsoft application that we tend to use pretty often. But the keynote sort of stole his thunder this morning. So
yeah, I mean, if you guys saw, they were talking a lot about that expense report application. You know, we actually have that application at Microsoft. And we've all got to go use it after this conference to file our expense reports. And you know, wouldn't it be awesome if that application actually was able to reach into my phone and get my photos without actually having to you know, find those and email them to myself or do any kind of junk like that? I was going to run out and actually talk to those guys right after this, but it sounds like, you know, Joe Belfiore might be doing that for me.
Maybe we can one-up them and just add in some WinML there and
there
have some
go.
Image classification, you know, read the receipts.
I don't want it judging my choices in food.
All right, so now I've eaten at the restaurant, I've written up my notes, I've edited my photos, I'm almost ready to publish this foodie post out to the world. But my friend's like, hold up, Megan. I also want my opinions to be part of your post, and I want my notes to be captured. And I'm like, okay, let's do this together. Let's make this a collaborative experience where we can both be engaged in the same page of the application and have both of our notes captured at the same time. So Sean, you've been really great helping me enable these cross-device experiences, but can this SDK also help me with collaboration?
Yeah, absolutely. This is actually my favorite demo. One of the things that we've enabled from on Windows machines is that we can actually connect two applications together on devices that are nearby to each other proximally. So the way that works, and again, we're back over onto Windows now, finally, some C#. Actually, I should have showed you in the last session, sorry, in the last demo, how you can connect to an app service via C# as well. Actually, I'll show that real quick. So you can see that I can discover devices, you know, just like I did on the Android SDK using the remote system watcher. I create this watcher to discover devices, and then I actually go and connect to app services on the Android device. So in this case, I tried to launch the MyFoodie service on the Android device. But right now, we're talking about sessions, and what sessions do is they allow you as an application to sort of create this proximal session that other instances of your application can join from other devices. So in that case, what I'm going to do here is create a session. Instead of using a remote system watcher, I'm going to use a remote system session controller. So you can see that, where did my mouse go? Well, you can see that right up here on this line is the remote system session controller that I create. I give it a session name, and then I wait for other people to join that session. I wait for people to join that session by hooking up to the join requested handler, and then I go and create that session, which opens it up. What the other machines do that are nearby is they go and try and discover that session. Instead of using a remote system watcher, they use a remote system session watcher, hook up those events, and try and look for a session. When they see a session, they can go and call and join that session. In this case here, that session gets joined. If it's successful, we can just start passing messages between. So we pass these value sets on Windows, which are really just key value pairs. So any object that can be serialized can have a string key in that object, and we can pass those around between applications, which is like a really powerful way to kind of pass things. Like if you have a MVVM application, you can kind of pass pieces of your view model around between different applications. So let's take a look at what that looks like in practice. So if I go over here to the review editor, what I've added to this application is I've added this little share button down at the bottom here. And what that does is it actually, I can optionally either create my own session using that session watcher, which will then broadcast this application is available to be connected to over Bluetooth or over the local network. Or we'll go and discover other applications. Wow, this is my favorite demo, and it's not working.
Did you create a session?
I did not create a session. Okay. I always thought you were creating a session, Megan.
I am creating a session. Session created.
Yeah, we'll just give that a second to create the session. What you'd see is the session would show up over here, and I'd be able to connect to it. So there we go. We saw it show up there. So once I connect to it, what's happened is that connection has been established, and I can send value sets back and forth. So in this case, what I've done in this application, I've actually hooked up, you know, this form here, which you can't actually see because the screen's too small, but there's all the review information in here, and this info at the top. And what we can do now is Megan actually has the same instance of this application. You guys can't see it open. I swear she does. It has it open over here on this machine. And what she can do is actually edit that at the same time. And what we'll see is, you know, things that she's done over here change over here. Yeah, it looks like we're having some network trouble, aren't we?
Yeah, the conference Wi-Fi has not
conference
been
Wi-Fi people.
Very yeah. helpful to us. It yeah. doesn't look like Sean actually joined my session.
I didn't
How
actually join
dare
your
you,
session.
Sean.
I know, that's super rude. So anyways, what we're doing is we're passing value sets around. Actually, there's a really good demo of this at our booth that I know I saw working, mm-hmm. Where there's like kind of collaborative drawing application. So you guys can go check that out. Obviously, the network in this room is not cooperating. But anyways, that was like a really simple way. That was really all I had to write in that application was those few lines of code and then pass mm-hmm. messages whenever my view model changed between those applications. And you can kind of have a live collaborative experience between your applications.
Yeah, I can definitely see why this is your favorite feature in our SDK, Sean, because it is really so few lines of code that suddenly enable your app to have this aspect of collaboration and enable collaborative experiences. And really all you have to do is create a session using the remote system session controller, then discover and connect to sessions using the remote session watcher, and send or broadcast messages using value sets. It's really as simple as that. And right now, this functionality works from Windows to Windows only. Again, we're hoping to bring it to iOS and Android in the near future as well, so then you can also collaborate across platforms. Now, it's really not that far of a stretch to think of how this could be valuable in your line of business applications. So think of any type of experience where you're sitting in the same room with somebody and want to collaborate. So this could be like a brainstorming session, or maybe you're collaborating on a finance report. Now you can do that in the same page of your application with, and here we've also shown it just using two machines, or tried to show it using two machines, but we've tested this with like a couple dozen, or a few dozen machines connected to the same session. So this isn't even just a one-to-one ratio. You can sit in a meeting room with 20 other people and have these collaborative experiences in your applications.
Yeah, one of the things I didn't show in the API is it's very simple to sort of either pass messages to everyone who's connected, if you have like five or six or multiple sessions connected with the same application, or just pass messages between a single instance of your application.
So we showed you guys some really powerful cross-device functionality today that you can now incorporate into your own applications. So we brought to you Nearby Share and how you can incorporate that into your Windows and Android applications, just like it exists in the Windows April 2018 update that we just released for Windows. We showed you how to do discovery, launch, and message, just like that functionality that's in Edge on Android and iOS, the Send to My PC. We showed you user activities, which powers sets and timeline. But one thing we didn't mention, the activity feed behind user activities, that's also the infrastructure for my personal favorite feature, Cloud Clipboard.
Why is it your personal favorite feature, Megan?
So I've personally been working very hard to bring Cloud Clipboard to everybody over the last few months. So hopefully we can get your hands on that soon and get you guys engaged in that activity-based feature as well.
I heard that's coming really soon.
I can neither confirm nor deny, John. We also showed you how to do messaging on iOS, or to iOS and Android, just like the same functionality that exists in the Your Phone app, how they retrieve SMS and retrieve photos. And we showed you how you can make your apps collaborative using remote sessions. So those of you who are at the session last year for Project Rome might remember that we announced the iOS and Microsoft Graph APIs to complement the experiences we were building for Windows. Well, you might have noticed by now, it's been a really busy year for us. So we're super excited to bring you guys Nearby Share on Android and Windows, receiving messages on Windows, Android, and iOS, user activities across the board, including Microsoft Graph, and sessions on Windows. What's next? Well, we have some ideas, and we're hoping to bring you the coming soon stuff in the near future, but we'd really love to hear from you guys in the audience and to know what we can do to empower you to create amazing cross-device experiences in your applications.
Yeah, so I'd like to leave you with this quote. Actually, I've been using this quote a little bit, so you may have seen it already before, but I really like it. It's from Bill Buxton, who's kind of the father of user interface research at Microsoft. And when I started working on Project Rome a couple years ago, he came to talk to us, and he left me with this quote from one of his papers, but he also kind of told us what it really means. And you know, he was really passionate about some of the stuff we were doing and thought it was really, really important and valuable because you know, as we get more and more devices in our personal ecosystem, you know, our lives are getting more complicated. I mean, to kind of strive as an industry, as software, and as devices for you know, users' lives to get easier every time they add devices to their ecosystem. And you kind of saw, you know, Satya touch on that as well in the keynote on the first day, where he mentioned, you know, the concept of really trying to up-level the operating system and putting, you know, people at the center and having their devices all work together to deliver solutions for people.
Yeah, I really agree with that, Sean, and really see how it impacts like the intelligent edge and understanding how really building in this intelligence to understand a user's devices and how a user uses those devices. And also just thinking back to my first anecdote about my first computer and how one desktop for four people, that used to be enough, that used to be normal. But technology has evolved, the experiences that technology provides have evolved, and so have our expectations as consumers. So you've all seen the experiences that Microsoft is building for cross-device, cross-platform. You've seen the experiences that are being built across the industry. And this quote really speaks to that innovation and how what was bleeding edge yesterday is table stakes today. So if you want more information about anything we showed you today or some of the other up-and-coming stuff, please check us out at aka.ms/projectrome. You can also reach out to us on Twitter or through GitHub. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and there's also a few related sessions. There's a session yesterday on Microsoft Graph, and there's actually one just before this that Yina did about Microsoft Graph. So be sure to check those out in the recording if you want to learn more about how you can do a lot of the stuff that we showed today directly through Microsoft Graph. There's also a pre-record that Jennifer did. I actually see Jennifer in the audience that talks a lot about specifically more detail on adding activities into the graph, both adding them like I showed here, but also being able to read them back from your application. Tomorrow morning, bright and early, Matt, who I see here looking a little panicked, has a session first thing in the morning on adaptive cards. So if you want to learn how to make your cards look really great in services like Timeline, and then in bots and Outlook and all the other places where adaptive cards will show up, be sure to check that out. And why not make it a double header? There's a session right afterwards that'll really deep dive onto what your application should do to integrate with sets. A lot of that'll be about using the client-side user activity APIs on Windows for your Windows application, but also other things that your app can do to integrate with sets on Windows. What else have we got? Tomorrow afternoon is a really cool session on how we've used a lot of this infrastructure to enable notifications across platforms that you can build on and make them kind of enterprise compliant and useful for your enterprise application. So go ahead, that's a great one to check out. I noticed actually over in the big hall in the mixed reality, they have a time machine. So if you want to go back, you can check out the really good workshop that Andrew and I did yesterday, again, about using those client APIs on Windows to add user activities to the timeline.
I don't think it's that much of a mixed reality show.
Yeah, actually, I know for a fact they're going to be publishing that one online with a VM so that you can actually go from your browser and log into their VM, and you can actually try out the sample and the code that we did there. And then finally, Megan and I will be at our booth on the show floor after this session, and then you can check out our teammates will be there
all day tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they'll have the demos that we showed here, as well as that sessions demo, which will be working great over there, I'm sure. So you can try that out. It's actually a really cool demo. I love it.
Yeah. All right, so also please complete an evaluation for this session. We love to get your feedback, figure out what we can do next year to make this even better for you guys. And there are awesome prizes, apparently, so definitely do that. And now we'd just like to open up the floor for any Q&A, anything you want us to revisit. Thank you all so much for being here. This was my first build doing a session on stage, so I really appreciate you guys all in the audience. But yeah, so.
If you have any questions, there's mics on either side.
Yeah, please use the mic so that the recording can get your questions.
So the question is, do you provide this for the Xamarin? Do you have an SDK for the Xamarin Forms?
Xamarin Forms. Yeah. So we have an SDK for Xamarin on Android that's using our older bits. We actually don't have that updated to the latest stuff that we just released earlier this week yet. But Xamarin Forms is going to be part of that SDK when it becomes available.
Okay. So the following question is that: what is the timeline for? When will it be available?
Hopefully in the next year, where by build next year, you guys should have your hands.
Certainly for Xamarin, it'll be hopefully a little bit shorter than that.
Yeah. In the next few months, let's say. I know we're actively working on it. It's a lot of feedback that we've gotten from the development community already. We're really excited to launch something for Xamarin as well. And really kind of complete this cross-platform story that we've been building.
There's a blog post that's linked to from our GitHub site that shows how to use the connected devices APIs through Microsoft Graph in a Xamarin Forms application. So that's an option there. You can authenticate your application using the OAuth provider, that Xamarin provides, and then you can just call the REST APIs that way, and you get a lot of similar functionality.
Okay, well, thank you.
So how does it technically work to make this session with a friend in the room?
The session that we showed here with the between two Windows devices?
Yes.
Yeah, so that in that case, discovery is happening over Bluetooth. So we'll discover the Bluetooth beacons that all Windows 10 devices have.
You send then the IP address over the Bluetooth.
And then we build that up to an IP address to connect between the devices. We also will do discovery.
So the devices need not to be paired.
Not need to be paired? No, they do not need to be paired. No. That's right. We'll also do discovery over UDP on the same network.
That can be the reason for the problem, because I don't think UDP works in such
kind.
That's right.
Yeah. So this did work on our conference network about, what, an hour ago?
Yeah.
I think.
And again, the demo has been working pretty well. I don't want to jinx it now, but at the booth downstairs, the device relay and activity feed booth, we do have a working demo of sessions, a little paint by numbers application. So that should be working. So if you want to see sessions in action and learn a little bit more about making your apps collaborative using sessions, definitely go check out that demo at the booth.
Yeah, one of the things that may have happened, which I think we saw, there was someone tried to do a demo earlier, where in conferences like this, where there's like a big mesh network, and devices are kind of moving between access points, and sometimes they can't quite see each other, and there's so much radio interference that sometimes the Bluetooth can't see each other. So sometimes we see that. We are kind of looking at how we might be able to work around that in future versions as well. Really, our goal is to make that something that developers don't have to worry about, because that's all kind of very complex. And all you really want as an application developer is a connection that's reliable to nearby devices. Cool. All right. Anything else?
All right, if there's no other questions, then thank you, everybody.
Cool, thanks.